Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Yes.
BB stands for best buddy. Justin Robert Young.
Oh, hi guys. Sorry, I'm confused because I'm currently voting in the podcast awards for us.
Yeah, man. Podcastawards.com. And you can, as a matter of fact, if you want to remember to vote every day, make it super easy. There's a bookmarklet. If you go to hat.t2t2.eu, you're able to just drag that to the bookmarklet section, your bookmark, and you click it, and it'll pop out and help you check everything.
It makes voting very, very easy for our little slate here. And hopefully by the end of it, we will come away victorious.
Dare to dream. Dare to dream. Speaking of dreaming, gentlemen, I am at MizCon. I'm in Missoula, Montana, right? A great little con here. Super nice people. Kevin J. Anderson's here. Patrick Roth is going to be here tomorrow. Jim Butcher. I mean, just a fantastic lineup. Buddy Peter J. Wax. And having a lot of fun. What's interesting about Missoula, by the way, is I did a little research on the area, and something rang in the back of my head, something, you know, kind of like Paleolithic about it. And I realized this was the location of where they had the great Missoula flood. There was this humongous flood about 12,000 years ago because there was an ice dam formed up, and you had basically about as much water as half of Lake Michigan was all welled up in here. And then the ice dam burst, and just in a matter of days, it just pushed right through Montana, through Idaho, and across Washington. And you can still see the scab land there where the water just pushed everything aside.
It's the scab land.
So you think about what that would have been like, because there would have been Native Americans living here at the time.
Yeah.
An amazing mega flood.
When we talk about belief in the supernatural or even beyond that, the theologically, like, that is an act of God, right? All of a sudden, yeah, a gigantic wave of water just wipes out everything you know and everybody you've ever met.
Well, especially when you camp for the life of you, like, let's say you traveled, I assume this went a good, 50, 100 miles or so. Let's say in your lifetime where it's expected that you've gone maybe 10 miles from where you're born, and you're like, I don't know of any place for this much water to come from. And then all of a sudden it's just over everything.
Yeah, and it's – there have been other events of floods similar to that. Like, there was probably one in the Mediterranean that were around in human lifetimes. And it's one of the reasons why flood myths are so pervasive. It's not just that, they had flooding. Like, no, they had, like, you know, 1,000 people just showed up in our territory because they told us the oceans opened up and took over their land. Gentlemen.
That's crazy.
Speaking of cons, I've got a question for you, a scenario for you both. Okay,
mm-hmm. All right.
I want you to imagine.
This is how it starts.
I want you to imagine that you're at a con.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll call it TexCon. Okay.
All right.
And you guys get asked onto a panel because of your award-winning work, possibly podcast award-winning work on the Weird Things podcast.
Sure.
And you're on a panel with some different people talking about science. And one of the people on the panel is sort of kind of an interesting guy. Maybe he's into lasers or something along the lines, and talking about different kinds of technologies, nanotech, medical tech, whatever. And he seems pretty smart, you know, kind of like big cutting edge, but kind of smart, right? After the panel, you guys are in conversation with this guy. We'll call him Frank, okay? And Frank says, I was just fun. You know, I can't talk publicly about a lot of my work, but, you know, some stuff you guys might be interested in. And he reaches into his pocket and he pulls out a small vial. Says, this is what I'm really proud about. This is what's really exciting.
I mean, first of all, just so we're clear, this is like right after the panel. This is in public. I mean, I'm looking over my shoulder for the fuzz.
Yeah, you're in the hallway. talk to him.
So out in the open, we're not at the bar or in the green room or any kind of like speakers lounge.
You're off to the side. You're off to the side in the corner, right?
How big a vial?
We can go ahead and suspend our disbelief because there's not a line of people looking to ask for our autograph or anything. So obviously this is a science fiction scenario.
They're all at Scott Sigler's booth getting his autograph.
As they well should be.
I mean, can I hold the vial? Can I take a look at it? Hold it up to the light? Shake it a bit?
Yeah, I give you the vial to look at, and it's maybe a slightly little gold amber, sort of this an amber kind of color to it.
Okay, so gold it is Schlager. Transparent, right? It is see-through.
Hmm. Yeah.
And then can I ask him casually, like, can I keep this? like not even knowing what it is.
You can ask anything you want.
The move there is the Vladimir Putin. I thank you very much for your gift.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I guess does he let me have it, or is he resistant?
But wait, hold on. No, you got to ask what the hell it is before you look to grab it.
You're not at all curious. You got to ask. You just want to take this without even knowing what it is.
All right, here. Brian is in the middle of saying, can I have – I say, Brian.
Justin, you're there too.
Right. All right, hold on. What the hell's in this vial, Dr. Von Kripo?
Well, one of the things I've been working on is creating nano-sized particles for curing diseases, particularly anything that's virus-related. Inside this vial, I have – we'll call it a solution that can prevent HIV, can prevent the common cold, it can prevent Zika, it can prevent a number of viral infections.
So this is like a universal viral vaccine?
Numerous viral vaccines.
Hmm. Is this all right? So you just drink it and you're good, or do you have to drink it and then like program, like that's like the hardware, and then you push in the software that cures whatever ails you?
No, it says you have to take it as like a nasal spray.
Well, that doesn't seem bad. I mean, like, surely there can't be any side effects to putting in a universal antiviral. How far along is this? Have you tested it on any humans yet?
He said that he's actually used this on people. He's had people who've been able to treat this with people for different conditions. People who, let's say, have, MRSA, further along with that, and they can't treat it. But it's not FDA approved. You know, he's working with doctors behind the scenes and sort of maybe, you know.
So please, MRSA's a bacteria, by the way. Please now meet my lab mate, Seth Brundle.
How does it work? Because the vaccine you of course have to take before you get the infection, but you're saying this would be a cure. This would be actually better than a vaccine, because if you already have it, you could treat it with this.
You can. What he explains what it is they're tiny little particles that would plug into the receptors either on viruses or bacteria, and in the bacteria it sort of shuts it down by plugging into whatever they're using to infect your body, and with virus, whatever they use to go into the cell, the protein structure there, it clogs that up.
Well, okay, now help me out here, because a virus is very different in size from a bacteria. Like we're talking orders of magnitudes difference. I'm going to say that anything that is good at killing a virus or a bacteria probably is good at killing maybe some things I don't want killed or plugging up some cells that I don't want plugged.
So he says, he explains to you sort of the science that like viruses have particular sized cell, particular size receptors, and bacteria do. And so what he did is he just made them the appropriate sizes to plug into those. So it's
basically like a two-headed screwdriver. It's got Phillips head on one side and regular flat head on the other. All right.
But at the same time, this is pretty much all medicine. At some point, right? At some point, we're like, whoa, wait a minute. I can take this pill and all of a sudden my head stops hurting. But what if it stops my heart?
Yeah. Does it stop our hearts? Have you had that happen yet?
No. She said no negative effects from it.
Okay, now when you say, now, I guess the only, I mean, look, we think you're great. This has been a great convention. We're all meeting for
still
drinks.
Still a great night.
We're still meeting for drinks in just a bit, but you know, I don't want to call nonsense on this, but how big is your sample size here? How big a trial have you run so far?
I mean, it's been small. I've, you know, given it to my kids, given it to some friends and family. I've had doctors who've had some patients that have really, really difficult progressive conditions.
Okay, at this point, the moment he says he's given it to his kids and a few other people, my BS alarms are in full. This is water. This is homeopathy. I don't believe any of it now. That's not the way grown-up science works.
All right, I'm pulling Brian back because now he's getting all
my shirt's like, already off.
Let me my shirt's off. He's you know. He's right now. He's crinkling his plastic cup that he got. Like it's starting to show the indents of his fingers. You said it's not approved by the FDA. Are you in the process of getting that happen? What is your long term goals with this? To your explanation, absolute medical breakthrough.
Get enough funding to be able to go do FDA trials. Get to the point where we can do that. You know, jump through all the hurdles there.
So this is some garage potion making is what you got right now, and now you're looking to kind of bring it into to the legitimate light.
Correct.
Quick question. You said it's a nanoparticle. You're not implying that they're like nano robots or whatever. You're saying this is a nanomaterial, some bits and pieces that like to plug in like jigsaw puzzles to receptors that affect viruses' ability to replicate.
Exactly, and bacteria. Exactly.
And how do you make it? How do you make this in your garage?
Well, I have a facility, and what we use is we use a grid of lasers, and we shoot gold particles through there, and the lasers were able to control the diameter. So if we knew a rhinovirus, what the receptor site, the size that is, we can finely tune our laser array and shoot the particle through there and create it the right size.
All right, Brian, come here.
Hold on. I think this guy's legit. He talked about gold and lasers. Yeah. He said he gave it to his kids.
What's better than gold?
Lasers. Gold that's been shaped by lasers is even better, right?
Man, I feel like this is like lasers and gold. Lasers and gold. You can't have a cure without lasers and gold.
All right, listen. I got like $20 right now. I bet he's seeking funding.
Wait, hold on, Brian. You were about to get into an old fashioned ham hock redneck fight.
Did you not hear the part where it's the lasers and gold? This guy's got the gold. He needs to buy more gold.
But I know what you're saying is who else here wants to see a leprechaun say yeah? But
yes.
Just do me a favor. Put your money back in your pocket. Put your shirt back on.
Okay. All right.
Sir, have you brought this to anybody who has tested it on any laboratory setting, even unofficially yet? Or has this just you been testing it on your friends and family up till now?
We've done some animal studies. Some animal tests.
Okay. Any kind of animal tests that aren't just you catching animals and testing it in your neighborhood? Like, have you brought it?
No. I've actually hired a lab. We've had, like, you know, a bunch of rabbits and stuff and given them to them.
And how did it go with the rabbits?
All fine. All healthy.
I mean, Justin, I swear, like, if it's not us, it's going to be someone else. We could get in ground floor with this.
I'm not asking you guys to invest. Just want to know. I liked you guys. Thought you were cool. Wanted to know if you wanted to try this. We can go out, you know, go out to my car and get a nasal spray. Let each of you try it.
I'm on some prescription medicines that this might interact with.
Yeah, I have to go to the dentist tomorrow, so they told me to not do any nasal sprays for 24 hours. So
last year, I sat on Santa's lap, and he said I only get a present if I don't take any drugs up the nose for a whole year.
Yeah, I'm in a very non-materialistic phase in my life right now, so I don't want to ingest gold or have it near me.
Yeah, you know, I'm currently doing an all-natural diet, and laser gold particles is not on. It's like, you know, that and a vegan.
Nostrils sewn up so I can better breathe through my mouth. So that's just a me thing.
But hey, man. Yeah. Wait. Have you tried this? You've tried this, right?
I'm asking you guys.
Yeah. All right, Neo. That seems a little evasive. You got a real bullet time response on that one. So you're telling me yes or no, you've done this yourself.
I haven't been in the situation precisely as described. So
wait, but the situation you're putting us in is some random dude says he's got gold potion. Do you want to snort it?
Justin, look, I'll take the knees. You hold him down.
I mean, we could just walk away.
No, look, the guy's clearly dangerous. He wants to slaughter us all with his gold lasers.
No, man, don't worry. Listen, I'm from South Florida. A strange person asking you to snort something is par for the course. Yeah, it happens all the time.
He already has the villain name and everything. He's Gold Laser. And he wants us to pour this in the reservoir. Hold on. Hey, have you poured this in any reservoirs yet?
No, I wouldn't have enough gold to quite do that. I can take a small amount, make
this
nasal spray.
Part of his plan is his lust for gold. Gold laser cannot be stopped.
This is definitely why he has to recruit us to break into Fort Knox, isn't it?
I mean, think about it. He's got this plan where he's like, gentlemen, you can heal everyone. All you need to do. The greedy fat cat lawyer is sitting on that golden Fort Knox.
Wait a minute. Are you saying, because this guy, Dr. Von Kripo, if you... You're saying that you haven't been in a situation that we're in. Are you saying that we're infected with something that needs your gold snorting treatment?
I'm saying that if you ever think you might get the cold or the flu again, this will help you prevent it.
Are you not afraid of getting the cold or the flu?
Yeah, hold
Someone
on.
Sneeze in this man's mouth.
Dr. Goldlaser, how long does this work? You just take it once and you're immune forever?
No, we're trying to figure out how long the immunity works is eventually that stuff works its way out of your body.
Okay. I mean, that seems good, right?
All right, Brian. Here we go. Are you ready? Rock, paper, scissors.
Wait. For which one of us does it?
Let's just go. Rock, paper, scissors.
Here sure. Okay, ready?
Okay.
One, two, three, go.
All right. Down below, okay? And then we'll bring it up into frame?
Sure.
Here we go. One, two, three, go. All right. Scissors beats middle finger.
Two beats one.
Yeah, scissors cuts off wiener.
Okay, fine.
For those of you listening to this, Brian raised his middle finger and Justin had scissors.
All right, fine.
Scissors
take a potion.
Cuts wiener, as we all know, in rock, paper, scissors.
I don't even get to, my kids aren't even here. I can't even blame them. Fine. Give me your potion. I'm going to take it. And then I take it and I snort it. And then I'm like, ooh, that's good stuff. And then I just get like real fired up, like I want to write a novel. Then I want to pick a fight with someone.
All right, Andrew, or Dr. Von Kripo, what does Brian start to experience?
So I don't know the answer to that, but here's what I can tell you. I was at a con, not this con, on a panel with a very, very credible, interesting guy talking about lasers and gold particles and nano stuff.
Oh my God, this is so much better than citing an article.
Oh, it's Brian. It's going to go deep here. Afterwards, we went off to the side and we started talking about nano stuff, nanoparticles, and he started explaining to me how he was, you know, he talked to people who were doing virus research and they'd imaged the rhinovirus. He says, well, what's the diameter of the receptor? They said this. He says, okay. Went back to his lab, adjusted his laser array grid, started producing gold particles of that, and said that he created a treatment for that. Same thing with MRSA, the bacteria. Said that he created gold nanoparticles that could go in there because gold is in your body.
Okay, so that's what I think threw me off track, because I thought it was a magic tincture that cured everything, but you're saying it's a process that custom yields basically corks to plug all of the reproductive holes on all of those naughty viruses and bacterias.
You dial it, you would create it to the specific size for the virus or the bacteria that you're trying to affect.
Wow. Okay?
So this guy's telling me this. He's telling me his entire process for how he's doing it, the people he's worked with, all this, how long it'll try to take to get this thing into,
we have an artist's rendering of exactly how it works. For the audio listeners, it's SpongeBob with all of his holes plugged up with corks. It's amazing.
Basically that. So he explains to me the process and all that, and I'm in the back of my mind, I'm like, is this guy crazy? Is this guy? And I've spent through my work and, you know, James Randi Foundation, I've been around a lot of crazy people, not just in the foundation, but I've talked to a lot of French scientists, a lot of French people, and I have a BS alarm. And I'm running right up on the edge of that there going, yeah, I think his science is sound. I think his physics is sound. I don't know if his biochemistry or his molecular biology is or is not. And I don't think I would be able to know unless we actually did clinical trials of it. But it wasn't nothing. He didn't go off in any sort of crazy area. My question was sort of more like, well, you know, what is the – how do you in, you know, what percent – what kind of delusions do you have to make sure the viruses connect with the receptors and all that? I can understand. So I don't know the answer to that. Anyhow, very, very interesting. Very, very interesting. And I went and I did some little research and I found out there's actually been some clinical trials and some investigation into this sort of treatment. And then, drum roll, please.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We had a headline this week, or a couple, actually 2 weeks ago, from IBM. IBM creates a molecule that could destroy all viruses. And what IBM has developed is a particularly custom designed molecule that works in a similar fashion to this, where it's basically it's designed with special receptors that attract the viruses and they plug right into it and then it disables them or prevents it from infecting cells.
So this is an interesting thing because oftentimes when we think of combating viruses, we have some kind of like fight fire with fire, Frankenstein's, you know, everything's great until the nanobots self-replicate or whatever. But because, and again, I'm stuck on that imagery of the corks, but because all we're doing is essentially making a bunch of corks, we have full control of the creation of this. And in each round of corks is built to plug a certain type of virus. That's astonishing. That seems fairly safe and smart if it works.
Yeah, there's actually a National Institute of Health study, Emerging Nanotechnology Approaches for HIV/AIDS Prevention and Treatment, which there's a graph there and it kind of sort of a diagram which sort of describes a very, very similar thing to what this guy explained to me about how you would use nano-sized particles to basically go in there and interfere with that process.
Man, that is astonishing.
Dude. So, crazy things happen at cons, guys.
So wait, so Brian, wait. In this scenario, like Brian won.
I snorted the gold. I feel great. I mean, assuming I had or was going to be exposed to whichever virus. Because I guess that's the other thing, too. If this stays in your system for some amount of time, I mean, if the corks can't find a thing to plug into, then let's assume that they're just in your bloodstream. And so you could be exposed to that and you'd be fine. And it's not like you'd sneeze and your corks would go out and ruin the day for someone else. This is amazing. Gold corks for the win.
Mm-hmm. So, gentlemen.
Listen, this is all fun and games until everybody starts replicating with gold skin and starts taking over the world, yeah. Right?
And it may turn out that this is spurious or whatever, or it's a blind, you know, it's an alley. It's not going to lead to any really promising thing, but it's a very interesting situation to be in, to be like, wow, this could be. And for me, it was this when I read the IBM thing. I'm like, man, this guy got less crazy in my mind. And I'm already I kind of think he's kind of onto something, to be honest with you, before that. But it was sort of an interesting little touchback to that.
Damn.
If you want us to keep bringing you the latest cutting edge research on what may be pseudoscientific, curious, we don't know. We're not qualified to tell you this. We need your support.
Yeah, man.
Absolutely. Head on to patreon.com/weirdthings and support us. Thank you to the 435 people who do support us and make sure that we have the time every single week to bring y'all all the weird y'all can handle. Such a fun time. Thank you.
Heck yeah.
We've had...
I had a question. We were gossiping just for a split second before the show, and I don't want to get dragged all the way into it because we ended up talking quite a bit about our first week with the Vive last week. 2 weeks in, Justin, you had some you're already starting to see the shape of...
Wait. This is our third topic, Brian.
Oh,
third
is it? Oh, all right. Hold enough.
I figured we'd do a kind of a longer Vive session towards the end and not worry about where that
was
going.
Sure, yeah. All right, cool. Yeah, no, that works for me.
There was a very interesting discovery, not a discovery, but a theory about what may be the densest bodies in the universe. Have you heard about this?
Yeah, Mr. December.
I'm on fire. Kids, where's your father? Upstairs watching gay porn.
It's a brain candy. Kids in the hall.
Oh my
Got
god.
It. Okay.
If you don't know about it, literally stop listening and watch it right now.
Yeah. So there is a there has been a research paper out which is speculating that there might be a new form of star that's denser than a neutron star.
Now, a neutron star, if I remember my basic astronomy, my astrology, is a Sagittarius. A neutron star is formed after a supernova, right? That's what's left over, just all the super dense, not quite a black hole. If a exploding star doesn't become a black hole, it becomes a neutron star?
Yeah, everything has – all of the electron shells have collapsed, so you're just left with the neutrons, okay? And there's been some – this has been proposed before, but there's been some new, you know, interesting research and ideas into what this might actually be something. And so there's a proposed new – denser star, a quark star.
Oh, wow. And I guess that's just because quarks are what constituent particles of neutrons. So breaking mm-hmm. down, you would have even less. If you picture neutrons being soda cans, this is all bottle caps, all crammed in there, super duper tight.
They say that when what they call a neutron degenerate matter, those degenerate neutrons get condensed even further than it could form what would be called.
Those are neutrons that are smoking weed, hanging out, skipping class.
Oh my God, neutron degenerate matter. I mean, that's an album right there, right?
Absolutely, man.
So I don't really have anything to add to that other than space is weird, guys.
Dude, and by the way, sticking on our little trip through the week that was in space, there was an amazing moment at our apartment here in Oakland where semi-jokingly, my wife, Ashley, said to me like, oh, yeah, SpaceX landed another rocket on a barge. Yawn. And it's like, I was very, very excited that even as a joke, like any joke, a joke is funny because it has that kernel of truth, but it's like, man, we're there. We're at the point where now the coolest thing about SpaceX landing a rocket is that they put a cool image of it on Instagram, right? Like that they had a better camera to capture it in a cool new different way, because the act of it actually happening is still something, or is now something that is like, yeah, no, I mean, cool, but in the way that, like, you know, planes taking off and landing are cool, right?
So somebody sent me a couple hours ago, I'm trying to find it in my Twitter timeline, but they sent me a link of somebody debunking this or saying that I believe it was a flat earther, saying that it was more fake propaganda trying to prove that the earth is round.
Obviously, we all accept that, but
It was something that they sent it to me, so it would be an @Schwood at the beginning, and I think you were tagged on there as well, Andrew Main. But it's amazing how somebody can adopt a reasonable tone of voice and just say, you know, like, oh, it's just fantasy. It's fantasy. So obviously not true. Yeah, we all want the earth to be round, but there are things that just aren't true. It's pretty I'll see if I can find it.
Let's pretend for the moment that we became somewhat more entertaining to the idea that the Earth was flat. Okay? Yeah. But let's hypothesize for a moment that for some reason we were persuaded by this. I don't know about you guys, but I know the moment I start to fall for that and start to ignore everything I know or all the critical questions I've asked, and I start to think the Earth is flat, I'm getting you guys on a Skype conference call, and I've got the most ambitious, amazing idea ever, and I've got a Kickstarter. You know what that is?
What?
An expedition to the edge of the world.
Oh, yeah.
I'm waiting for one of these guys to go, and it's always dudes, by the way. I'm waiting for one of them to, like, you know, hey, guys, you know, the Earth is flat. I'm starting a Kickstarter. We're going to go to the edge of the world and prove it.
Well, and to what point? I mean, like,
well,
let's say,
and that's, I think we talked about this when the BOB you know, Neil deGrasse Tyson thing blew up, that like the funniest thing about, well, not funny, but I mean, like the most interesting thing about this to me is that the you know, conspiracies spawn, right? So it's like, it's not just flat earth. It's also global government and clones and facial recognition through Snapchat filters, right? Like it is all that kind of like multiplies on multiplies on multiplies, because now you can string all these things together. And now this is the emergence of a world making sense as opposed to a bunch of disparate ideas. But yeah, that's like I could see like, oh, well, why can't we get to the edge of the world? Because the global government will murder you if you launch that Kickstarter.
Yeah, well, here, listen to some of the logic here.
So it comes down for a straight landing. Give me a break. There you go. It's all about proving the ball earth. Now, you got a rocket in the bottom. How does this pencil, basically a flying pencil, you know, regain itself and land straight down like this? What a complete joke. You know, I understand people want to believe this is real. You know, when I was a child, I wanted to believe, you know, that unicorns are real, that dinosaurs are real, somewhere in Africa still alive today, that there was a pot at the end of the rainbow. But this is not reality. People are still children. They believe this is possible, but it's not. And where's the amateur footage of this? Let's get a little bit of a close-up here.
So this is absence of...
Look at these swells hitting the side of this barge. I believe this thing can really land like this. Give me a break.
Okay, time out. This is always so astonishing to me, because like there's just so many, like it's such good shotgunning, because I struggle to process each phrase. And by the time I even have half of an answer formed, he's already made four more. That are too far for me to reach towards. So anyway, I thought that was really interesting.
Well, I mean, it shows you what kind of scientific marvel it is, right? That at this point, as we who have followed this for so many years, I mean, I guess if in, and not in his defense, right? But in seeking to understand it, we have followed SpaceX's evolution for what? Six years?
Yeah.
6 years, right? 7 years? Like, and Andrew has been more, you know, focused on kind of rocketry and stuff like that, probably from before that. So, like, this idea we have come to very, very gradually, because we have watched SpaceX kind of, they've announced stuff years in advance and they've set their goals and they've done the tests and we've watched the tests and everything. So it's like we can see it go one by one by one. If you automatically, you know, had these beliefs and then just saw this thing, you'd be like, oh God, look at what they're trying to pass off now. Especially if you believe that there's a global government run by lizards in the middle of the earth and that they are cloning celebrities to control us. You know, it's so fascinating. But on its core level, from our perspective, it shows that, listen, these are, I mean, not anything that we don't know, but like amazing revolutionary scientific things, enough so that people are like, well, obviously this can't be true. There's no way that this can't be true.
I guess he's just ahead of the curve, because the only difference is, you know, like everybody accepted the moon landing as real because they watched all of the pieces come together. They understood all of the pieces as it went. And it was only 10 years later that people were like, man, that was pretty crazy. It's just hard to believe we did that. And then, thus the conspiracy theories started to get, grown. I think this guy's 10 years ahead of his time. I think 10 years from now, when we're swimming in reused rockets, is when he should be claiming that all this is fake and that that clearly.
Although,
it's
by
not
the way,
possible.
He says, "Where's the amateur footage?" There probably is amateur footage of them landing it in Cape Canaveral, right? The first one, not the barge, but you know, I'm sure that there are people who watched it come back down there in the dead of night.
Yeah. So,
well, what does that prove, guys? What does that prove?
Where's the amateur footage of our Weird Things podcast, huh? You're telling me with three guys all sitting around talking about weird stuff?
That he's asking for amateur footage for something 100 miles out at sea or more shows you how much he does not grasp and how little he's bothered to look into this.
Yeah. Shows how dedicated he is. That shows how he's always thinking smarter than Elon Musk.
Yeah, I don't know.
You ever think
I
it's mean, strange listen, that like, he's got a bunch of S's in his name? He's clearly a snake lizard man.
I mean, I think it's certainly an easy, and here we go. Now we're watching amateur footage of the Falcon 9 launch and landing from late last year at Cape Canaveral. I mean, it's very, very easy to pick on that guy. But obviously, I think there is ample evidence to answer any and all the questions that he has.
Well, that the bottom line is that if you're going to go out and make a bunch of claims that something's BS and you won't even take 20 minutes to get your to even ask basic questions of where was this done? Ike, you're really opening yourself up. It's one thing if somebody is at sort of the limit of their ability to understand stuff. If somebody says, you know, oh, maybe ESP is real, maybe these things, which I think aren't.
Yeah, even if, you know, you're at the different conclusion, you can at least understand the impulses that would drive people to ask that.
Well, yeah, I'm saying that there's some things are harder for the average person to understand why they may not be true. And some things are a lot easier just to ask basic questions like, where was that drone ship?
Yeah.
You know, and if you knew, if you just at least understood where that was supposed to be, you'd know why there wouldn't be amateur footage of it.
Yeah.
But of course, that's what they want you to think.
I don't know. You're telling me there's just no boats in the ocean that day? No boats. No boats happen to be around.
Yeah.
It's on the ocean.
You know what? Fun fact. I had a friend that wanted to go get video of that to show it.
Yeah.
The government told him he couldn't be there. I wonder why.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not within 100 miles, they said.
What are they trying to hide? Gentlemen, it's been, a week since you got your Vive, right?
Yeah, we're at 2 weeks now. Almost two weeks.
So you're sick of them, right? You're ready to throw them back in the box and ship them back to Vive and say, screw you guys, you ripped me off, I hate you forever, right? Right?
No. Although it has been long enough that I think we are starting to, I suspect, and I don't want to speak for Justin, but I know that I am paying a lot more attention to the games and whether they're good. Like right now, it's like the early days of color television. You didn't care what it was in color. Same thing with HD. It's like, yeah, I'll watch a sunrise for an hour on this channel. I don't care. It's in HD. But go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think Andrew made a really fun analogy when we were talking about the Gear VR, that it's like if you've never seen VR before, to look at the Gear VR, it's like the first people to watch a moving motion picture, like train pulls into station. You're like, oh, God, stop the train. It's going to hit us.
Yes,
like,
yes.
There is this kind of amazing, like, immersive kind of thing. And then once you've used it, you're like, okay, this is, like, aight, right? It's okay. It's good. It's nice. But it's like Google Cardboard, but a little bit more fancy pants. Once you play the Vive and you kind of get over just the fact that this thing exists and a little bit of I use the word novelty, but not in a negative way, but just that like, okay, so now this is a world that I can visit all the time, and you start to focus on the games. What I think kind of has made it such a magical experience, but both at the beginning and now persisting, is that the games that are there now really have, in their own different ways, tapped into some of what makes this experience so special.
Yes. Well, and to my surprise, the most enduring of all the games that I've played, and again, I haven't been able to dedicate as much time as I'd like. The realities of living get in the way. But I'm shocked. Every time I load up my Vive, the first game I go back and play over and over and over again is Space Pirate Trainer. And it is dead simple. It's just Galaga in all directions coming at you. And you just shoot all the drones out of the sky. It seems like when it's a game that is a natural fit, when everything feels right, you know, you reach back over your shoulder to grab the shield and you switch ammunition on your guns and it feels like you're holding guns and stuff. It's very, very good. I have heard great, great things about Vanishing Realms, but ultimately I guess I don't, it's a big sprawling RPG. And the problem is I want very short, very intense interactions with my VR. I want something extremely high fidelity, for a relatively short time. I don't think I could do 3 or 4 hours in a row of Vanishing Realms.
I totally could. And I like Vanishing Realms. My problem is that and Jeff Cannata actually informed me of this. I didn't know this on Twitter today, but it's all designed by one dude. In fact, by and large, I'm just going to take a wild guess and say the vast majority of what you're seeing right now on Vive have very small developmental teams. And certainly not anywhere near where I think it's going to get to. I like Vanishing Realms, and I am fine to take, you know, an hour here and again to tell a larger story. I would very much be excited for that. But like any larger story, you need to have it needs to be something super exciting, right? It needs to be something that you are super pumped to do. And I don't know if we are quite there yet with Vanishing Realms, specifically because lore is a little gobbledygooky, and the mechanics of it, although when it is revolutionary, are very exciting, can tend to get like, okay, here's another gigantic skeleton creature. I'm going to wait until he lunges so I can hit him with my sword. It's not quite as thrilling. But again, these are very, very, very early days on it. And you can certainly see where Vanishing Realms, I think the lessons will be learned for it going forward.
Yeah, I suspect I would not be terribly into Vanishing Realms, regardless of the format. Again, it's great and it's novel, but it's just awfully big, and I find myself doing other things. Did get to play some Hover Junkers, which takes some getting used to on the mechanics on that. Hover Junkers is the only Vive game that you move, or that I've experienced, that you move without physically walking around in, and that's the one part of it that I'm not a crazy fan of. That's the only time that I feel kind of sick to my stomach or get a bit of a weird motion vibe. I don't know. Were you a fan? You don't necessarily like first person shooters at all.
I don't. And I love Hover Junkers. It's by far been the one that I've played the most. It's funny. Ashley initially had, some real, motion sickness problems with that one. And then wound up doing, okay with it. Kept playing it, and that was that. So just to give you a sense of Hover Junkers, what the idea is that you are on the deck of a ship, right? So you are walking around in your space, but you are also moving your larger ship in this map. And the goal is to shoot and kill as many of the pilots on other similar junkers in the allotted period.
But specifically, because you can stand up and dodge around left and right, built into the game is your ability to actually build your own cover scheme. You build, you know, a tall thing to hide behind over here, a short thing over here.
So it's simultaneously kind of riding around, and then when you get kind of junker to junker, now it becomes this sort of dodge behind a wall and then like peek out and try to shoot somebody and then dodge back behind and stuff like that.
Yeah. No, really, really creative stuff. At this
also
point,
by the way, Brian, we can play two people on a junker.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So one of us can drive and one of us can shoot.
Dude, in all the way in. By the way, did you ever figure out like why? Is there a microphone built into the Vive? Because yes. I can't seem to select it.
Yes.
All right.
No. Well, yeah. I think it might be your problem might be trying to do too much. Like once it's selected, you just hold the things and you talk.
No. Yeah. No, I did all. I'm saying you can't even select it in the. We don't want to check this out on the air. Windows doesn't seem to be under the impression that there's a microphone on the Vive is what I'm saying. So what do we know anything about some of the games coming down the pipeline for the Vive?
Kanata sent me a link to something that was promising to be more of a storytelling thing that it will be. It promises to be the most complete. Here, let me see if I can I can find it. The Assembly. The trailer promises a VR thriller with impossible choices. A behind-the-scenes video plays up the completeness of the virtual world. What I suspect is what they're saying is that every frame, it's so dense.
Although Kanata was also telling me about games where it's just like a mistype puzzle, where it's like you're just in the environment, nothing's coming at you, there's no timer, you're not hustled, but it's like you just got to solve a problem and how to get there. And you know, if you want to get something out of your backpack, you just reach back, open up your backpack, rummage around, and be like, oh, I wonder if this coil fits into this jibber job, and you give it a try and try to solve stuff that way, which seems like a very kind of low key. Highly immersive experience that would be different from what.
Well,
we're
and
seeing.
I think that that's ultimately where we're going to see things going is that you can have something very very active in this space and you can have something very very immersive in this space. And I think the games that try to do both of them might be missing the point compared to the ones that want to lead more and more into that direction and then use the elements of the other one. Just to their advantage, right? Like you can make a game like Space Pirate Trainers that is very, 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 you know, dependent on your gun and reflexes and stuff like that. And you can make that, I mean, that is already a fairly immersive game. You can make it more immersive, right? But ultimately, this is going to be about shooting things out of the sky. Or you can make something that is very storytelling, that maybe does not rely on you moving and jumping and ducking and dodging. And it is more turn-based, but relies on the immersive nature of it. Because I think, like, just a Final Fantasy game, a turn-based combat game, I would absolutely love. And I think that you could take new and different storytelling challenges with that very seriously with VR. And it doesn't have to, everything doesn't have to be move your shield and move your sword. Because now you're simulating combat just because you can. And that's where I think, you know, Vanishing Realms, I think kind of that's a lesson to be learned from there is that ultimately, like, I want to go through this lore. I want to go through this puzzle. I want to solve these things and I want to save the whatever tilting espers and the vanishing realms or whatever. But I don't need to have this be a hack and slash.
Yeah, the there was that Wired article where they talked a lot about the Magic Leap a month or two ago, and one of the tidbits that they said was research seems to indicate that, you know, after playing about an hour of Minecraft, people first person perspective, people get really fatigued. It's just so much and everything's so loud. Whereas if they take that game, still keep you have the VR gear on you, but then they just put it inside of this two-dimensional screen, and it's a big, fat, awesome-looking screen, and you're just playing two-dimensional Minecraft on that screen. People can go 2 or 3 hours without much fatigue or a break.
All right, real quick, let's cap this off. I don't know if we bitched about this before, but Nashcom just brought up this Wired article about Magic Leap. Can we just scroll down to the first two paragraphs of that story? Here we go. There's something happening in a generic office park in an uninspiring suburb near Fort Lauderdale, Florida. My home, this is.
Yeah, I sent that to you because I'm like, look what they're calling our hometown.
An uninspiring part of suburban Fort Lauderdale. This is where we grew up. F you, Wired. You're uninspiring.
Gentlemen, you know, that's great. You got VR, but I'm totally happy playing this iOS game called What's in the Box. And it's a series of box-themed puzzles. And it's, you know, not 3D. It's not VR, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Totally happy playing this. And that's my pick this week, What's in the Box.
So you do eventually get to find out what's in the box, though, right? Because let me guess, is it another box? It's always another box, isn't it?
I don't know. I'm trying to solve the puzzle, Brian.
Okay.
I'm sure it's Brad Pitt's favorite game.
Yes. What's in the box?
Brian, what's your pick?
I'll tell you what. I'm only a little bit into it. Let me make sure I get the title right. On Audible, I am listening to Smarter, Faster, Better by Charles Duhigg. He's the guy who wrote The Power of Habit, which I thought was a little bit overhyped, but I'm really enjoying Smarter, Better, Faster. Smarter, Better, Faster. It talks about what makes for good teams, and it turns out that it's not how smart they all are. It's not whether they have a strong leader or whether or not you have clashing personalities. Spoiler alert, as far as I can tell, it's about listening to people, and it talks about the research that Google did internally to sort of monitor all their team meetings and figure out, like, hey, here are our best practices that are the most effective, and when everybody feels heard, even if their idea doesn't get used, even if it gets voted down, they are far more more effective. And so really, really good stuff. I'm enjoying it.
Man, listening, the ability to keep people on the same page and not tune out is like that. That to me is all of what, you know, not only leadership, but also just being a good teammate kind of is, you know. I think people tend to think that, like, when you hold information back, that you're maybe doing somebody a favor, or you're not, like, by not disrupting things, that it's going to be better. And ultimately, I don't know. I think we're constantly underestimating everybody's capacity to make a decision, or at least believe in a decision if they are given options,
or even to understand that what they honestly think is the best way to go about it. Maybe won't get picked for purely political reasons, or because, you know, this option's just not on the table. Like, people can, when people try to understand everyone else's point of view, you certainly increase the opportunity that everyone will end up on the same page, if not get the same things that they wanted.
My pick is Hover Junkers. We just talked about it, but last night on our on my Twitch channel, twitch.tv/Jerrystone, we had me, Brett, the Amtrekker Roundsville, my contender co-creator, John Teasdale, and his girlfriend, Jessica, were over, and we literally just played Hover Junkers on stream and, like, commentated over it, and it was just an absolute blast, man. Like, we had such a fun time. The people watching seemed to have a real fun time with it, and it just kind of was very, very, it made me very, very happy that we could turn a very solitary experience like VR into something that was a lot more communal, that a dialed in joy could be broadcast on that level. And I was very, very happy with that. And I think it's also a big credit to Hover Junkers, because I think that that's certainly going to be something that continues to be built upon.
I think we're at this point where the thing that this seems very familiar to me with, the where Vive is going, is kind of like when the iPhone first came out. And then when he got the App Store, and the first things in were cool, and it's cool, these little handheld things. All of a sudden, you had a device that kind of had sort of the power of, like, you know, in a Game Boy or a Game Gear or something like that. And then handheld games started getting more and more complex and more engrossing, to the point that they were a very dominant part of gaming. And I think that's happening with Vive, is that the novelty is there, but we're going to see the quality and the immersion just increase.
So. Yeah. Do you think there's any chance that there's a VR crash? I mean, everything goes in fits and starts, and you never know what's going to happen. But have we hit a technological base minimum level where pretty much from here on out, there's always at least some kind of VR presence that's pretty good, and it'd be much like mobile? Like, after the iPhone, the smartphone, you know, never slipped back in popularity. Mm-hmm. You know, it'll get bigger and smaller, but never go away.
And then we saw two platforms, you know, then we saw Android come out there. And so we saw that two platforms could exist if they kind of were solved, did similar things, but solved different economic needs and different sometimes technical requirements for people. I think that the fact that, look at how Oculus has morphed over the last couple of years. Now they have, with the camera, and if you can add another camera and it can do room sensing like the Vive, it's probably not as, it's not a... It's not as, from what I understand, I can just make it, not as evolved as the Vive room sensing, but we understand, like, yeah, you don't just want to sit in one space and turn your head around. You want to get up and walk around a little bit. So I think that we figured out that those experiences need to have very similar experiences. You know, I got to look through here, see this. We're going to get wider fields of view. You know, we still need to get total immersion, which we're not there yet. We need to get better resolution. But the experience from you guys, you're both saying, this is good enough for me right now to spend more time on.
Oh, absolutely. And
without a doubt.
Yeah. Hey, if we have time, one quick plug I would love to get in is we finally got off our butts and spent the literal 15 minutes that we advertise to other people it takes to create a website on Squarespace. And on Squarespace, we made themodernrogue.com. And I'm just so excited about the way the site came out. Brant put this amazing video that loops in the background that welcomes you when you hit the page up. I'm just extraordinarily pleased with it. It looks really badass.
Yeah. Absolutely. Everybody needs to go there and bookmark it. I think what you guys are doing with The Modern Rogue is awesome and inspiring. It's television quality, largely because these were all the things that you were not allowed to do on television. So,
I love watching these two idiots about to set a garage on fire of children's toys there.
It's authentic.
I hope they're not home.
Of course, the irony is we're holding fire extinguishers at that moment. And of course, fire extinguishers aren't going to work on the rocket fuel that we made because it self-oxidizes. And I keep having to explain to everyone, we weren't holding the fire extinguishers for the rocket fuel. It was for all the other stuff that's not rocket fuel that was getting ready to combust.
Yes. Fire is contagious.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, it's been weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.